Good afternoon and welcome to On the Docket. I'm your host, Patricia Salkin, Dean of Touro Law Center in Central Islip. And every Sunday at this time, we talk about current legal issues and how they affect you. Today, On the Docket, we're talking about the recent floods that hit Long Island last week. Long Island experienced about 2 months worth of rain in 2 hours. These floods greatly impacted various towns in Long Island, and our guests are here to provide some information and advice to homeowners affected by the recent floods. On the show today, we have Melissa Luckman. She received her bachelor's in psychology from Long Island University in 2006 with Psy-Chi honors and her Juris Doctor degree from Touro College's Jacob D. Fuchsberg Law Center in 2010. Upon admission, Ms. Luckman became an associate at various firms where she practiced in the areas of matrimonial, family custody, commercial litigation, trusts and estates, real estate, and civil defense litigation. Ms. Luckman is currently the staff attorney at Touro Law Center's Disaster Relief Clinic. And as staff attorney, she works on flood insurance cases, contractor disputes, and New York Rising cases. Thanks for joining us today, Melissa.
Thank you, Dean Salkin.
Also on the air today, we have Scott Primiano, who's the founding partner of Polestar Performance Programs Incorporated, the premier consulting and sales management company in the insurance industry. Recognized nationally for his innovative agency and carrier performance development programs, Scott has committed his professional life to improving the industry sales and client service standards and practices. After 25 years of creating, consulting, coaching, and promoting best practices throughout the insurance industry, Scott retired from Polestar and created the Flood Direct National Insurance Program, designed specifically to inform, educate, and advocate for clients and this forgotten line of coverage. Direct Flood was launched after experiencing the aftermaths of Hurricane Katrina, Irene, and Sandy firsthand. Scott's also the 2013 recipient of the Samuel J. Duboff Memorial Award and was recently named the 2014 Pro Bono Allied Professional Volunteer of the Year for his work with Touro Law Center's Disaster Relief Clinic. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Dean.
So let me just throw this out to you guys. What resources exist for households affected by the recent flooding?
Right now, people can reach out to the Red Cross. They can contact them at 516-747-3500. Long Island residents can also dial 211. It's a Long Island call center. Trained professionals will answer the calls and assess what everyone's needs are and find appropriate community resources. As of right now, it's unclear whether FEMA is going to declare the flooding a disaster. News 12 reports that FEMA is on the island this week, and they are assessing the situation, so we should hopefully have an update on that soon. And in addition, all homeowners want to make sure to call and fax written notice to your homeowner's insurance as well as your flood insurer so they're on notice that you do have a claim, speak with them, put everything in writing, and send it certified.
So you mentioned FEMA, you mentioned insurance companies, homeowners insurance. What insurance actually applies to the storm?
That's an awesome question. It truly depends on what caused the damage, what the approximate cause of the damage was. Unlike Sandy, where the entire area was inundated, on Long Island we were spot inundated, for lack of a better term. And the claims we've looked at thus far have varying sources of causation. So a sump pump fails. That's not a flood claim, that's a homeowner's claim. Water comes in from the top as opposed to ground up. Mm-hmm. That's a homeowner's claim and not a flood claim. The definition of flood to be a flood claim, there has to be 2 or more acres inundated temporarily and or two or more properties affected. So the answer to that question is going to depend on the home, where it was situated, and what caused the damage.
And so now that we have damage in the home, how does somebody begin to select a contractor, and should they do this before they have their insurance company come in and take a look?
I think the best route of travel currently is to open a claim, a first notice a claim with both the homeowner's insurance and flood insurance if you have it. What's interesting, and sad about this storm is many of the affected people were not coastal properties, but north of 27 and north of the southern state. So the impact on those who didn't have flood insurance, and many of those folks don't, is significant. So if you have flood insurance, open a first report of claim. If you, and certainly you have homeowners insurance, open a first report of claim with them as well. And then the adjusters, along with the insurance companies and the insurance broker, will determine which insurance policy is going to respond. Then you begin to talk about fixing it and mitigating.
And how long, Scott, does the process take once you open the claim to get the adjusters out to take a look at the damage?
Normally, it's 1 or 2 days.
Okay.
Now, if we're at this point, now we're a week after the storm, and there's soaking carpets or, you know, soggy drywall and damaged property, now's a good time to begin to mitigate that, get the carpet out of the house to avoid future damage. And all insurance companies will allow for any type of mitigation that wouldn't, that goes to prevent any additional damage.
Or so if you have to remove the carpets or you have to start to get the drywall removed or deal with some electrical issues, how do you go about selecting the contractor?
Well, you're kind of on your own to do that. And there are steps we encourage you to take, and that's, of course, to use people who are known in the community, people who are here, people who have a good reputation. And there are certain steps you can take to verify that they're not three guys in a truck who are going to take your deposit and depart.
You know, one of the steps we suggest is obtaining the contractor's license number. Both counties in Nassau and Suffolk have an Office of Consumer Affairs, and you can run a search with the contractor's license number, make sure they're licensed, see if there's any open complaints against them. You can also ask for insurance coverage. Licensed contractors are required to have insurance that provides evidence of liability and workers' compensation coverage, which is important in the event that anything should happen while they're working on your property. After you have selected a contractor, make sure you have a detailed proposal. It should have a description of all the work with a correlating amount for how much that exact description will cost you. If there are any change orders down the line, whether it be materials or amount of time or quality of work, everything must be in writing. One of the biggest problems we see are homeowners relying on an oral conversation with the contractor. Contractor backs out, and the homeowner, unfortunately, is left to suffer. You also want to make sure to have extremely detailed and accurate bookkeeping. Every single dollar that goes to the contractor must be documented. I suggest using personal checks. I know a lot of people don't use checks. If you're going to pay cash, make sure you have a signed receipt so it's acknowledged by the contractor that you have paid, or have them send you some kind of invoice, but definitely don't pay all in cash without any proof of payment.
Right, and so this is good advice for making sure that one disaster doesn't turn into a secondary disaster.
Absolutely.
But so if in some cases the repairs or perhaps reconstruction from the flooding requires somebody to leave their home, what insurance do you have if your home is vacant or under construction?
That's a great question and a serious concern. What we found during Sandy and what tends to be the pattern of a homeowner is there's a belief that if we don't talk to our mortgage company and if we don't talk to our insurance company, no news being good news, that our policy is still in effect, when in fact that's about the worst thing we can do. Most homeowners policies have a vacancy clause, and a vacancy clause basically says if a home is vacant, you're not living there, or unoccupied, which means you're not living there but intend to return and your contents are there, you have a certain period of time before your policy self-cancels. So now 2 years after Sandy, without a lot of people home, we still have vacant properties where the owners have the false belief that their homeowner's policy is covering it when in fact it isn't.
Hmm. So why isn't this just covered under a normal homeowner's policy?
In general, homeowners insurance companies want to insure pristine, perfect, ideal homes with mom, dad, kids, and that's it. I mean, that's their ideal risk pick. When anything happens, when there's a material change to the property, if it's undergoing a significant construction, or if there's a vacancy, they will challenge the policy and cancel it, not honor the claim.
Important issues. I want to thank you, Melissa Luckman and Scott Primiano. Stay with us because coming up, we'll continue our discussion on insurance and how it can assist you in disastrous events. Welcome back to On the Docket. This is Toro Law Dean Patricia Salkin, and we're joined by Melissa Luckman, staff attorney at Toro Law Center's Disaster Relief Clinic, and Scott Primiano, president of the Insurance Advocates Flood Direct National Insurance Program. Before the break, we were talking about the kinds of insurance that apply to flood relief. What insurance should you have in place in the future to insure against these types of events? And are they easy to get now that we've seen in a relatively short period of time two significant flooding events in this area?
That's a great question. Ideally, a homeowner, and we had these policies readily available in the past on Long Island, would have a HO5 policy, a homeowner's 5 policy, which provides it's a broad form, covers pretty much anything that could happen to your home except flood, an earthquake, and a couple of other exclusions. Right now on Long Island, for homeowners, we're pretty much limited, unless you live dead center island, we're pretty much limited to what's called an HO3 policy. HO3 policy is a name peril policy and covers most of the things that could happen to your home with one key exception. Though wind damage is covered, there's a significant deductible that is designed to not pay for your roof. And it's usually a percentage of the total premium. I'm sorry, the total limit. So homeowners should be looking for an HO5 policy if it's available. It's a broad form, which doesn't have a wind deductible. And in the event that they probably can't find that, mm-hmm. an HO3 with the lowest possible wind deductible is what we recommend. Neither of those policies covers flood. And one of the things we'd like to talk to our clients about, and certainly anybody who will listen to us, to have a flood policy or to recommend a flood policy doesn't require you to live in a flood zone. As we just discovered after this rain event, most or many of the people who were affected were not anywhere near the coast or anywhere near a traditional flood zone, yet they were affected. So our mantra is where it rains, it floods. And a flood policy can be gotten. Nobody gets turned down. For a relatively inexpensive amount, in a preferred flood, a preferred zone, you can get a preferred policy for as little as $129 a year.
And that's a great security if you can afford the policy in your budget. How do you go about protecting important documents? I think that many people keep in their homes wills, tax records, maybe their birth certificates or social security cards, and you know, oftentimes they may be just left in a drawer someplace or in a box on the floor, but yet these are documents that are needed just when you don't have them.
We suggest keeping any important documents, whether they be wills or tax papers, anything, social security numbers, in a safe deposit box. If you're going to keep them in your home, keep them in a waterproof or a fireproof safe. And you don't want to keep them in your basement. I know on Long Island, the majority of people have basements. Don't keep your prized possessions down there. If the past years have taught you anything, keep your prized possessions on the higher levels of your home. And just taking a step back, some really important documents that should be in place looking ahead and moving forward, you want to make sure if you're living with a disabled or an elderly person, you want to make sure that there's an executed power of attorney in place. You know, go to your attorney, make sure it's done properly, because you want to be able to handle matters for them in the event they're elderly, they're sick. You want to be able to speak to the bank or their charge cards or on tax matters with regard to anything. Also, a problem that we found was a lot of people were living in homes that were gifted to them by their parents or grandparents, and none of the proper paperwork was ever done. So technically, they weren't the homeowner of record. So we suggest going to an attorney and having a deed transfer done so the home is actually in your name, so you can actually be afforded help by the state or from other volunteer resources as well.
So good advice. We've been talking about when there's structural damage to the home or when you have electrical problems or things that prevent you from living in the home. But what about protection for personal property? You know, what if you have that really expensive baseball card collection? You know, what if you collect antique motorcycles, or you have that classic car collection? How do you protect that kind of personal property?
It's a sad statement, but most of the folks who are affected by a flood don't point to the couch or the curtains as their greatest loss. They point to the photo album. They point to their family treasures, which are priceless. And one of the things we recommend and help our clients do, actually, is prepare well in advance. And as Melissa indicated, preparation seems to be the key to success in getting through a flood event without it being a major trauma. Certainly, moving all prized possessions to the highest floor of the home is a good first step. But in addition to that, we like to prepare our clients for the claim that hopefully will never happen, but if it does, we're prepared. And what that means is a photo inventory of all personal possessions, along with either a spreadsheet or even a handwritten log of what they are and what the estimated value is. Something like that held online or off-site in a safe deposit box takes the challenge out of putting a personal property claim together after particularly a flood event, which is traumatic enough. So having things stored online, having things stored electronically, having things stored off-site and available when needed is, I think, critical.
And just to touch on what Scott said, also, just again, preparing for the future, any items that you're replacing now, whether they be couch or furniture, and even if you get that credit card statement every month that shows how much you paid, keep the regular receipts from the store with the itemized list of what you purchased, when you purchased it, because that's really what insurance companies are looking for right now when you're putting in homeowners' claims. You know, they want actual proof of payment, not just a blanket amount on a credit card statement with no proof of where those funds were really spent.
And I think the general theme to prepare correctly is to ask ourselves the question, what if the flood were to happen tomorrow? What would we do? Where would we go? How would we get there? We encourage everybody to have a go bag, and a go bag consists of what you might expect it would consist of: first aid kit, flashlight, batteries, food supplies, blankets, additional clothing, depending on the season. Pet food turned out to be a very big deal during the last storm, so having a store of pet food. But really know where you're going to go. We evacuated an entire coastline during Sandy, and most people were caught unaware and unprepared, didn't have places to go, didn't have hotel rooms were booked, didn't have relatives willing or waiting to accept them, and it became a real challenge. So have an evacuation plan ready to go, and know where you're going, bring your emergency numbers, have your claim already prepared to submit in advance, and it will be simply an annoyance as opposed to a catastrophe.
And despite the public perception of the jokes of whether or not the Weather Service always gets the weather correct, when there is a warning for a significant hurricane, people should take it seriously. They shouldn't say, oh, it's not going to happen because they're always wrong.
Absolutely.
Absolutely correct.
So we mentioned a great deal of information on the show this afternoon. Can you let listeners know where they can find this information online and how they can access the resources available?
Sure. The Disaster Clinic has an online blog, and we'll have all the information that we spoke about on the show. That can be found at disasterlaw.wordpress.com. We also have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TLC Heart. It'll have all the contact phone numbers, all resources. It'll all have all of Scott Premiano's contact information as well. And that'll be a good starting point for people for resources.
Excellent. Well, thank you. That wraps it up for us here on the docket. Melissa Luckman, Scott Premiano, thank you both for joining us today. And thank you to everybody for tuning in. Don't forget to join us again next week for On the Docket. The show airs every Sunday at 4:30 on Long Island News 103.9. I'm Patricia Salkin. On behalf of Touro Law Center, have a great week.